There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
If this the best nation, why y'all can't get rid of lice season? If y'all the best nation, get rid of that damn lice on your back. Get rid of lice. Get rid of lice season.
Do you feel from this experience that you owe anybody an apology? Do you see your own fault in any way?
As far as standing there, I had every right to do so. My position is that I was not disrespectful to Mr. Phillips. I respect him. I'd like to talk to him. I mean, in hindsight, I wish we could have walked away and avoided the whole thing. But I can't say that I'm sorry for listening to him and standing there.
Let's go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. A lot to talk about over the next couple of hours of live local talk. That's right, not from some satellite, not from some distant radio conglomerate, from right here at home, Bigler Broadcasting at FM Talk 106.5. Coming up on the show, hey y'all, I'm Sean. Coming up on the show today, a bunch of different folks are going to join us. Brendan Kirby in hour number two, also Lenny Slagon from Fox 10 is going to join us. Coming up this hour, Cameron Smith from AL.com, and he has a brand new gig. We'll talk about the new job added to his card. His card is one of those, probably if he hands out his card, he's got to turn it over. You know, we have more gigs in the gig economy, but he's got a big one just added to the resume. Talk to him about that and a whole lot more coming up in the second half of this hour. Also, weather-wise, rain, we've already had some pretty good showers coming through here at our studios, and we're near Airport and 65 right here at that interchange. But the bigger rain is on the way, and the bigger rain's been north. So my people up in Washington County, Chatham, and y'all, I just saw a stat here. It is since this morning. Area from stretching back into Mississippi, kind of coming through state line, Mississippi. What's up, state line? Up through Chatham and going to the northeast has had 4 to 5 inches of rain in, you know, one of those training effects already. So I'm sure there's going to be some watch here for some fluttering, because I can tell you right now, it is soaked up there. As this started, it was already soaked up there, and now you're getting this rain on top of it, and that is going to be hitting us in Mobile and Baldwin counties probably over the next hour and a half to 2 hours. We'll get more from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams coming your way at about 12:30. All right, a couple things I want to get into, and we're going to get into why I start, other than wanting to play some Metallica. Number one, Dalton, do you think about this too? You've got Sandman. Nick Sandman from Covington Catholic, interviewed by Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show. But you also have Mariano Rivera, like you talked about in sports today, being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Also, the Sandman. So double Sandmans. So I had to go with that to start off the show. That's the reasoning. And I'd like to hear the song, so it's my show, and I did it. We'll talk just for a second there. Mario Rivera, Sandman, entered in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Now we'll get into Sandman, and also the president saying, hey, I don't care if the letter said that I wasn't invited, you didn't want to have the State of the Union next week. The president says he's coming, so we'll get into that. But first, NBC's Savannah Guthrie, who interviewed Nick Sandman, the Covington High School student at the center of these controversy, or I'd say one of the players. I don't think he's the only player at the center, but I'll say, in my opinion, This is what we're about. You can have a different opinion. My opinion, he is the biggest of the harmed parties in this. He sat down with Savannah Guthrie. They ran that interview this morning. And I'll say this, pretty good tell. Story from thehill.com had this headline. And maybe, you know, maybe Savannah, you're doing something right here. NBC's Guthrie slammed by the left and the right over interview with Covington student Sandman. Okay? So she's getting critique from both sides. Well, maybe... I mean, that's what you should get. That's what you, I mean, that's what we should aspire to. I'm going to play a couple of the cuts from this. The interview went about 8.5 minutes. I cut out some of the pieces here for y'all to hear. Making sure to do my darndest to keep things in context, you know, because this is the crux of this whole story, is the fact that that video clip that went viral over the weekend that had everybody jumping to conclusions was taken out of context. Now, the context of that video was an hour and 10 minutes. That's a big context. But you should have put some more in there to set the frame for that interchange. It was not done. Of course, we know the fallout since then. But we'll get into this. So when I play these clips, I try to leave them there. Some are a little bit long because I'm trying to make sure if we're talking about something taken out of context, we sure as heck are going to address things in context when we do it. All right, so ran this morning on the Today Show, Savannah Guthrie talking to Nick Sandman. The first question here discussing what was going on leading up to the clip that we all have seen at this point. And she's talking to him and asks him that.
A lot of hateful things.
Sandman and dozens of his classmates had just finished attending an anti-abortion March for Life rally when they converged with five Hebrew Israelites, a radical movement.
Okay, wait a second. Can we stop for a second? Stop for a second. Can I? Because she did this a couple times during the interview. This is not anything other than the name of the group. Now, and Southern Poverty Law Center is looking at them. I did some digging around for their ideology. Talk about something that would run afoul of today's world. But the group calls themselves the Black Hebrew Israelites. Okay? I know Savannah just, and through this interview, says the Hebrew Israelites, but just really, I mean, nothing other than the fact that this group sees themselves specific to skin color, or at least puts it in the title of their group, in the name of their group. So I want to make sure that doesn't get out of context.
It's growing more militant, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
They started shouting a bunch of, homophobic, racist, derogatory comments at us.
What kinds of things did you hear them say?
I heard them call us incest kids, bigots, racists. They called us
a bunch of incest babies, a bunch of child molesting.
Did you feel threatened at all?
I definitely felt threatened.
There were more of you than them, but you felt like they were stronger?
They were a group of adults, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen next.
It's unclear from the videos who actually started the confrontation. Each side believes it was the first to be taunted. Sandman says his chaperone gave students permission to shout school chants, an attempt, he says, to drown out the Hebrew Israelites.
All right, so that kind of sets a stage, right, for this, what ended up being the clip that people saw. And you can go on. I mean, I linked the video up the other day, I think on Monday. It's an hour and 10 minutes of it. I mean, the insults, one after another, the lice clip that I play. Hey, listen, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But Savannah saying you felt threatened, there were more of you than them. They're grown-ups. How many times as a kid, and you think back, somebody's parent or an adult who, you know, you might have outweighed at that point. If they called you out, you felt like you were about 4 inches tall. It didn't matter if Mr. McGillicuddy was like 4'9". That was Mr. McGillicuddy. They were an adult. So I don't think that's a fair thing, saying, oh, well, you shouldn't have felt threatened. There were more of you 16-year-olds than there were of the Black Hebrew Israelites that were protesting. All right, she went on to talk about the standoff.
Phillips says he was trying to defuse the tense situation.
Now, Phillips is the Native American protester you've seen in the video.
Sandman says he was confused about Phillips's motives and why he was there.
At first, we were unsure of whether he was trying to join in and drum to our chants or what he was doing.
Did you feel like he was trying to get somewhere else to go toward the Lincoln Memorial?
I'm not sure where he wanted to go. And if he wanted to walk past me, I would have let him go.
All right, so a little bit of the standoff that you've seen. Also, Savannah Guthrie goes on and talks about who has the right to stand there. Ask that question.
There's something aggressive about standing there, standing your ground. You both stood your ground, and it was like a stare down. What do you think of that now when you think about that moment?
Oh, I would say Mr. Phillips had his right to come up to me. I had my right to stay there. Our school was slandered by the African Americans who had called us all sorts of things.
All right. Coming back, some more clips from this morning's interview. Savannah Guthrie getting flanked from the right and the left, which may mean she might have been doing it right, huh? Coming right back, we'll get your calls as well. 343-0106 as we roll on. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Now, I've been monitoring that traffic accident, but it wasn't until just now that I saw, I'll tell you the serious part. You've got one person taken to the hospital, tractor-trailer crash 65 northbound near the Cottage Hill Road overpass. I'll be keeping up with that in the traffic department. It's right here, not too far from our studios, just south of us. And no more detail there from Mobile Fire Rescue on other than they transported to the hospital. But I will say this, Dalton, did you see the tractor-trailer? Yeah, it's a Coors Light truck. Coors Light. So, I mean, if you want to, I'll cover for you. But nobody will probably call here between now and when Cameron comes on. If you want to go see if they're moving some of that stuff out, we can go take some off their hands. All right, 12 days. Dalton just broke out at a sprint for the front door. My man. All right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5, phone number, text line. I may answer them myself at 343-0106. And before we get back into the Savannah Guthrie interview this morning with Nick Sandman, I guess because there's two ends. It's Sandman, not Sandman. Like, if you put two ends at the end of Spider-Man, it'd be wouldn't be Spider-Man, it'd be Spider-Man. Mr. Spider. Before we get into that, I quickly want to hit on the story. You'll probably hear an update here from Westwood One News in just about 10 minutes. But President Trump commenting here on the State of the Union address. He says he is going to deliver the State of the Union address from the House next week. President said he will be honoring House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's prior invitation to deliver the State of the Union address on January 29th, rebuffing her request earlier this month to delay the speech until after the government shutdown ends. So there's the original. It's all part of the way things are done in Washington, right? So the House hosts the State of the Union. So the Speaker sends a letter to the President inviting them to give the dual body, full chamber address for the State of the Union. But in the meantime, the story we talked about that Speaker Pelosi said, hey, let's hold off on this during the shutdown. So President Trump is saying, basically, to translate into Sullivanese, I didn't see your second letter. I'm sticking with the first one. Here's President wrote in a letter. I would be so very sad for our country if the State of the Union were not delivered on time, on schedule, and very importantly, on location. Exclamation point. So watch how this works. This will be interesting. And maybe Cameron can help us with this. I don't know. Can the Speaker... I mean, the Speaker doesn't outrank the President, but the Speaker is the ranking member of the House. Can they say we're not doing it? This could bring up some interesting angles. All right, so back to this interview this morning, today's show, Savannah Guthrie sitting down with Nick Sandman and getting flack from the right and left. And I tell you, I like these things when it goes that way, because that means maybe she's closer to what should be asked here. I want to go to, let's go to cut number four here. This is a question. Well, no, I'll tell you what. Yeah, let's go to four and then we'll go to the next one. Four here is the question about the smirk. Okay, this is one where I may deviate with what seems to be talking points out of a lot of people in talk radio. Let's go to that cut.
What do you think that looks like?
I see it as a smile saying that this is the best you're going to get out of me. You won't get any further reaction of aggression, and I'm willing to stand here as long as you want to hit this drum in my face.
What some people see is a young kid with a smirk on his face.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say for people who see that and are making a judgment about who you are?
Well, people have judged me based off one expression, which I wasn't smirking, but people have assumed that's what I have, and they've gone from there to titling me and labeling me as a racist person, someone that's disrespectful to adults, which they've had to assume so many things to get there without consulting anyone that can give them the opposite story.
Okay. This is one of the points there. He kind of, I don't know if he admitted it, he just didn't, at first when asked about the smirk, didn't say, no, I wasn't smirking. I would argue this. I think it was a smirk. Own the smirk. I mean, whether it's from nerves or irritation, but somebody is in your face and the kid smirked. Just if you smirked, say you smirked. Own the smirk if you were smirking. Once again, we're trying to make sure people are being honest here. I mean, if you'd been insulted a bunch of times and then somebody comes and gets in your face and you do the whole, I'm going to do right here, put my hands in my pocket, maybe you were smirking. Or maybe you were smirking. And also, to jump back here in the interview a little bit, Savannah Guthrie asking about the insults after the Covington Catholic High School kids were insulted by the Black Hebrew Israelites. Did they shout insults back?
To start chanting back at the protesters.
In hindsight, I wish we had just found another spot to wait for our buses. But at the time, being positive seemed better than letting them slander us with all of these things. So I wish we could have walked away.
Did anyone shout any insults back or any racial slurs back at the group?
We're a Catholic school and it's not tolerated. They don't tolerate racism, and none of my classmates are racist people.
Did anyone say build the wall?
I never heard anyone say build the wall, and I don't think I've seen it in any videos.
After a review of the videos, NBC News could not hear anyone shouting that hot button phrase. But Nathan Phillips claims he heard the teens shout build the wall.
Now, Nathan Phillips, Native American protester, here he is.
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
Phillips was with a group of Native Americans coming from an Indigenous Peoples March when he can be seen walking between the students and the protesters.
I intervened and things just escalated from there.
Okay, so he said he heard that, but NBC, you heard Savannah Guthrie say, they listened to it, trying to ascertain what was in there. They did not hear it. So wherever your prejudice or your predetermined beliefs on things are, NBC listens to it and says they didn't hear it. I mean, it would make a better story had they heard it, but they did not hear it. The kids, like I pointed out on Monday watching the video, were being goofy high school boys and doing chants. And the one, one guy, I think he's probably a down lineman too, Dalton, if you saw him take his shirt off. He decided to take his shirt off and do the big cheer, looking at his fellow classmates, not looking at the other protesters. I mean, it's not the greatest look there on the mall, but they're high school boys. All right. Let's go to the question about the Make America Great Again hats, the MAGA hats.
As for those red Make America Great Again hats that some students were wearing, Sandman says he bought his that day from a street vendor in Washington.
Do you think if you weren't wearing that hat, this might not have happened or it might have been different?
That's possible, but I would have to assume what Mr. Phillips was thinking, and I'd rather let him speak for why he came up to us.
Oh, by the way, just side question, and I'm not a guy that wears a Make America Great Again hat. I don't have any Trump logoed gear I walk around in. Not going to happen anytime soon, but never had a political sign in my yard, never wore, imagine that, and what I do, never political sign in my yard, never had a shirt or logo or anything on like that. But if the new thing is you can see that Make America Great Again hat, and that means this person is this way, until you ask them if they're that way, and then ascertain that individual. If so, then everybody who I see, which is not a bunch of people anymore, and not a bunch of people around here, but I have seen it with my own eyes on more than five fingers times, the Che Guevara T-shirts. And I told you, I come at this at a kind of a strange angle, because early in my childhood lived in Miami. Had a lot of friends who were, their parents came over, or they came over with their parents, Cubans. And be nice to hear what they think, what a Che Guevara t-shirt means to them. All right, and the last cut here, let's go to this. This is Savannah Guthrie asking Nick Sandman what it's been like since the weekend and this video went out.
And what's it been like to be at the center of the storm?
Well, it's weird to see your face on television. I've been reading a lot, and, you know, I've also been getting a lot of messages from people, both support and a lot of hateful things.
All right. So there it is. This is going to be just another chapter in like a Tolstoy novel of what is either the real conflict in the United States, which I will argue I think it's over-dramatized in media. I think you take people that are the exception. And I mean the Covington High School kids, but the people they interacted with and all sides, these are the exception. And you try to frame that. And politicians on both sides will try to frame that is the rule. Now, I can only be clear about what I see every day. I can only be an anecdotal professor here. And seeing that, I don't see that in my daily life. Are there issues in this country? Sure. Are they anything reflective of what this has been framed on social media to be? I don't think so. What I will say, though, is the attacks against the kids from Covington High School, because a whole suite of assumptions about them, that they fit whatever stereotype, and so therefore it is okay to attack and impugn them, is wrong. And I want everybody to think about this, too. Next time the story, even if the story swings the other way politically, remember this. Before you, now you can dog out ideas all day long, but before you assume that some person you've never met, never heard from before, new on the scene, is something, don't be prejudicial. Dig in a little more. All right, Cameron Smith joins us coming up next.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1234 FM Talk 106.5. If you haven't gotten enough rain yet, don't worry, Mobile and Baldwin County. More bands coming out of southeast Mississippi heading our way. And like I said, those folks up at Chatham, areas to the northeast of Chatham and back to the southwest towards State Line, Mississippi, looked at a rainfall total. Y'all have gotten like 4.5 to 5 inches already this morning from like a training effect from these storms. And I can tell you right now, it's already soaked up in that area. And with that kind of rain on top of it, it probably will cause some issues up there. We'll check in with Dr. Bill, get more about that coming up in just a little bit. Hey, y'all say hello again to our buddy from AL.com. And we're going to fill in one of the other titles for my friend Cameron Smith. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean.
Okay. I got to get to this before we go any further. You, a man of many hats, have a very big hat you just put on. Tell us about the new gig.
Well, I'm really excited. Representative Gary Palmer from Alabama's 6th District asked me to help him with the House Republican Policy Committee, and so I agreed to do that. And it's an honor to work for a member who's really focused on ideas and helping Republicans develop some policies at a time where we've been very reactive, where a lot of policy has kind of fallen by the wayside because, frankly, a lot of good policy doesn't make for great headlines.
And talk about that, though. I mean, so like a Wikipedia first two paragraph entry here. When you go to work as a member of the Republican Policy Committee, I mean, helping with that, what do? You sit down and write out the idea, write out bills? What does it look like?
Well, the one thing that we're starting off with is just getting our feet under us, getting organized. The Republican Policy Committee has a number of members who all have ideas and input into that process within the House Republican Caucus. But one of the things that we're doing is what members were elected to do, which is look at problems our nation faces, do some research, look at the facts, and develop policy solutions. These aren't complicated, but that's where I have the opportunity to help support members who are looking to have ideas make a comeback in a media cycle that doesn't really want to talk about details that often.
For sure, but they're lucky to have your brain as part of that, and I can't wait to talk more about that in the weeks and months to come. And something you and I talked about during the news break, we got a couple other issues we're going to get into, but I just heard the story, Westwood One News Update, about the revolution, civil war, strike, whatever you want to call it, semantics game, the troubles in Venezuela right now with Maduro possibly being ousted. And if people remember, it wasn't too far back in the time machine, Venezuela was a capitalist country and was doing really, really pretty darn good as a, you know, as a South American country, doing really good as a South American country. And now it has all gone backwards. And that's a country that fully embraced socialism, right? Just like some of the new folks, new kids on the block that got elected for the Democrats want us to do.
Well, it's inconvenient. It doesn't fit within the media narrative that, oh, well, socialism, it's a thing of the past. Don't really worry about that. Just look at Venezuela. It is a test case in what happens when government consolidates power, gains control, and moves to a model that's different than capitalism, that's different than free people. And I think the decline of Venezuela from a crown jewel of South America to being on the brink of civil war is a excellent test case in what we need to avoid, the kind of policies that should concern us, because consolidating government power is rarely a good idea.
Yeah, and people will argue that it's not the actual former government, it's the corruption that's bad, but I would point out that corruption is part of human nature, sad to say, and so whatever kind of government system you put in, corruption will be there. But it seems to me, and there are so much corruption in capitalist systems too, but it seems to be weaker in a capitalist system than it would be in a communist or a socialist system.
Sure. In a socialist system, you need perfect humans. You need humans who behave altruistically, who aren't motivated by the markets, the laws of supply and demand, who are looking out for everyone all the time. And even then, it still probably wouldn't work. But the biggest challenge, particularly when you're looking at forms of government, is where you consolidate power. Where power is consolidated, it's easy for corruption to have control. Corruption is a reality, as you pointed it out, that it's an unfortunate accompaniment to sinful nature and human mm-hmm. beings. But when you consolidate government power, you create a tool that can be devastating. And that's something that our founders wisely realized they should do everything they could to divide power, to divide it amongst the branches of the federal government, to divide it between federal and state. That has preserved liberty in the United States for a very long time.
Well said. All right, I want to and get to a kind of a pivot point here in the discussion. First half hour talking about the story surrounding Covington Catholic High School kids and the protest and everything that went on there and what was taken out of context. But you mentioned earlier working on details, and details are not really what drive the news cycle. I so many times say, quit looking at, you know, the worship of man, quit looking at the cult of personality or the demagoguing of this personality or that, and let's talk issues. But that often falls on deaf ears, and sometimes deaf ears. But you said losing focus here politically following a story like this versus what? What should we be talking about?
Well, it's easy for me as a policy wonk to say, hey, pay attention to the details. Details matter. But I understand how media cycles work, too. I understand that headlines really grab your attention. They're a play on emotion. They want to get you fired up and weighing in on random things that, frankly, can be a distraction. And I think the question that we need to ask ourselves is, okay, what are the real problems that we're facing? What are the problems that we're looking to solve? And now we've got a problem defined. So we can sort of start there. It might be something like border security. Well, we know drugs are coming across the southwest border. We can argue whether they're at lawful points of entry or other areas, but we know they're coming. We know where they're coming from. There's ample government information about that type of thing. So we've got a problem. What are the facts? We start looking and seeing what the facts are on the ground. A lot of that's boring, frankly. It's just research, looking into the flow of drugs, agency reports, different things like that. It's really detailed and granular. And then we say, those are the facts. What are the principles? And then we develop solutions. This is how public policy is supposed to work. And instead, the media cycle goes to a protest on the steps of the Supreme Court between a high school student and another gentleman, and that sucks all the life out of the discussion. And really, that's a perfect test case of where we're easily distracted by something that's emotionally charged,
mm-hmm.
when we should be looking at the problems. Folks in Alabama should be calling their members and saying, hey, you represent me. I see this problem. What are you going to do about it? And those members should be developing solutions. And I think we've got a lot of folks thinking about those things, but man, those Twitter distractions, those things on social media, they get a lot of bandwidth.
Talking to Cameron Smith with AL.com and the Republican Policy Committee, how about this? We Democrats will say there's a need for border security. They're even willing to spend more money for border security. The president, Republicans say yes, and we need to build a wall or fence or whatever. It's not against a barrier along the southern border. So there's an admission, it seems like, the American people believe border security is important. Now, if tomorrow there was a raid that removed Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Donald Trump, all from office, all the people that are demagogued on both sides, there would still be an issue on the southern border, even if those people weren't there.
Absolutely.
I mean, that gets to the crux of it. Whatever those issues are that we define as the people, that are the issues that are plaguing us as a people in all, or a group of us, or whatever it is that we find important, even if those people that end up being the targets on both sides of this, if they're gone, the issue is still there. It doesn't go away with the person.
Right, and this is what our founders knew when they created the system that they did, that we would have these passionate disagreements. We would have folks coming and going in elected office. That would be sort of the nature of how it happened. What I think we have lost sight of perhaps a little bit here is we need to be willing to compromise. The president, for example, put some ideas on the table, says, well, how about this? Democrats say no. I think what we're seeing here and from the president is a willingness to say, hey, I realize we were both at loggerheads. I'm putting something on the table. You're telling me it's a non-starter. Now I think it's incumbent on Democrats to say, okay, well, how about this? And having the exchange until we can reach a resolution, rather than saying this is about personalities, this is about winning at politics, rather than saying, hey, we know we need to secure our borders. Democrats, I think, will concede that point. It's a matter of how, and you know, what part of that's a physical barrier, what part of that is in heightened security at existing ports of entry. Those are the details that need to be hammered out, and until there's a willingness to move off of the polar positions, I think it's going to be tough to reach a compromise.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. We come back from the break because some people have offered some different ideas what may be the other way out. Does it come to a situation where the president declares this emergency, makes emergency declaration, that it gets caught up in court and both sides can claim that, oh yeah, well, we won that one? Or does it turn out to be something else that becomes the path to getting government opened back up? We'll continue that conversation with Cameron Smith, AL.com, and Republican Policy Committee, and I'll attest to it, policy wonk, and I like that. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Okay, coming up next hour, you turn up your voice. Got a lot to talk about here. Also, the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. All these years later, we'll talk to Brendan Kirby about that. Actually, I saw my buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com, and Republican Policy Institute tweeting out favorite quotes. You're Twitter or Facebook. They all get mashed up with me, but talk about favorite MLK quotes.
Well, I mean, my favorite MLK anything is Letter from a Birmingham City Jail. That to me is a seminal work that everybody needs to read and understand about justice, understand about when you're doing something that you know is right and other people are telling you, wait, you know, don't disturb people, you know, this isn't going to go well. Read that. And that to me is something I try to read it several times a year, because when you work in and around politics, sometimes doing the right thing, you need a little bit of emotional encouragement, and that letter absolutely provides it.
That's for sure. And that's part of what you're doing with the Republican Policy Committee and coming up with those policies. But, I mean, we talked about this a second ago. For the discussion of border security, the wall, whatever, what's going on the southern border, even if the players that are demagogued on both sides of this were all of a sudden, and I'm not saying this is happening, y'all, but all removed from office tomorrow. I mean, Pelosi, Schumer, Trump, pick some names. They're all gone. Here comes a van, picks them all up. They're all the issues don't go away. It's not the people. There are issues that affect the American people. There are people that are surrogates for solutions, but they are just that. They are surrogates. They are not themselves the solution.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's where ideas have consequences. And frankly, the lack of ideas has far worse consequences. We have to focus on where can we find some common ground, because it's easy for the political right to say, hey, we're going to do things that are popular with our base. It's easy for the political left to say, we're going to do things that are popular with our base. Where it's hard is to say, the truth where we can actually solve the problem that exists in the real world is some kind of compromise in the middle where each side probably has to give up something. And those details, that wrangling, figuring that out, requires people of goodwill from different political camps to come together and try to find a solution.
All right. As we talk about solutions out there, obviously border security takes a big part of the conversation. But you know me, speaking of being a wonk, I want to hear something, maybe, you know, in this next year, something that we're realizing we can't spend like this forever. You know, I mean, it's Republicans, it's Democrats, it's everybody, it seems like, is not going to stop the spending train. Will there be some discussion for the 2019 on just easing back on things a little bit?
Well, I can tell you with Congressman Palmer, he's long been a fiscal conservative who actually looks at budgets. He's the type of member who sits down and will read through them, look at the line-by-line items and say, oh, you know, what have we done year over year? Where are some areas that we can change the trajectory? Sean, we've talked about this for a long time. It's simple math. If you can't find ways to reduce spending so you're not deficit spending year over year, you can't even begin to tackle the national debt. And this has been something that I think folks have jokingly said, well, fiscal conservatism is over. We're all liberal spenders now. And that's just not a good enough answer. The debt service that we're going to wind up paying for your kids and my kids is going to have tragic implications. And hopefully we can develop some sensible solutions based on some good ideas. States, I know this may sound wild, but there are a lot of states that have tax and expenditure limits, things that can impose some fiscal constraint, and that's a great place to start looking for some policy ideas that might work at the federal level.
I can't wait to hear more about them. And then I got to ask you before we wrap up here, because of your time on the Hill and your time in Washington and just the fact that you're hyper-educated on these things and lots of others, what's the deal next week? Do you know that? So the president says, he comes out and says, hey, I'm coming. Thank you for the invitation. Obviously, that would have been from the first letter from Speaker Pelosi, which is, you know, part and parcel to how Washington works. The speaker offers a letter. The president accepts. They come do the State of the Union. But in the meantime, had offered the second letter saying, hey, don't come because of the partial government shutdown. Who gets to make that? Obviously the president would outrank the Speaker of the House, but it is the Speaker's house. Who can she stop that? Or I mean, do you know how that would work?
Well, I'm not sure how it's going to work out in terms of the pageantry, but I can tell you that what we know is that we have separate branches of government, each that are distinct and each have their own purview. We sometimes forget that because things kind of blend together along partisan lines. But the Congress, specifically the House, is effectively controlled by the Speaker of the House. It's a distinct branch from the White House. And for example, it would be a little unorthodox for the Speaker of the House to walk right into the White House in the Oval Office and give an address.
Right.
Similarly, it would be a little unorthodox for the president to walk into the House of Representatives and give an address without being invited.
I mean, you mentioned the pageantry, right? Always that I would know, it was just all kind of matter of fact. It's not that they were dying to get the president from the other party, whatever, whoever's in power, to come into the State of the Union, but it was part of the gig as Speaker. You invited the president to do that. I mean, it's almost like a form letter you send out. But now if that's challenged, like, gosh, it seems like at a state level and a federal level, all these things get challenged more often. This would be new territory.
Sure, but this is the nature, and frankly, it's something that I'm excited about in American politics, is we have a politically resilient system. I know it's easy to be down in the mouth about it and say, well, things aren't working as intended, things aren't great. You know what? That's true, but things are really not going great in Venezuela. I would not trade with China.
Right.
We can look around the world,
right,
and I'll take a little political theater for the form of government that we've got.
I agree. I'll take that that trade any day. And yeah, I'm going to go see what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is saying on Twitter about Venezuela, but we'll have to address that on the next show. All right, if people want to get in touch with you, whether it's talking about what we talked about today, or they want to say, hey, if you're doing policy, have you ever thought of this? You're going to get so mad at me. Can you give them your Twitter address?
Hey, I'll give you both of them. I think this is a great idea. My personal Twitter's at @dcameronsmith. I always like the conversation. But check out at GOP Policy. That's the Republican Policy Committee's account. And if you've got an idea and you want to just throw it out there and say, hey, have you thought about this? The answer sometimes is no. And we'd love to hear that. Chairman Palmer would love to hear that. And I'd really appreciate it. So check out at GOP Policy.
Cameron, as always, man, I enjoyed talking to you, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Cameron Smith joining us here. Hour number one in the books and up on the podcast page in just about 15 minutes or so. Hour number two on the way. Lenise Ligon from Fox 10 TV. She's got a great event coming up. She's going to stop in and talk about that. Plus, Brendan Kirby joins us coming up in just a second. And we'll talk about reasons to cheer Martin Luther King's legacy.